Michael Babcock with the Portage Health Foundation here. I'm inviting you to join me this month for a special series of the PHF podcast focused on Copper Country senior meals. In this series, we'll meet key leadership, get a behind-the-scenes look at their homemade meals, talk with one of their beloved delivery drivers, and go to one of their congregate meal sites. We'll also discuss their active GoFundMe fundraiser. Find the podcast series wherever you listen to podcasts by searching for the PHF podcast or go to coppercountryseniormeals.org.
Good Sunday morning and welcome to Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program is brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation. You can find out more about them and their mission at phfgive.org. We have had over the past few months another couple of tragic teen suicides in our region, and I thought that it would once again be appropriate to bring an expert onto the program to talk about that, what happens to teenagers when they go through that, and what we as people around them, grown-ups and people around them, can do perhaps to spot these warning signs and prevent these tragedies from happening. So I welcome into the program Dr. Jason Bombard. He is a psychiatrist with Aspirus. Dr. Bombard, welcome to the program, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very happy to be able to speak about this very important topic with you.
Let's start with something that anybody who has had a child and raised them to adulthood understands. Teenagers get moody. That's just part of the game. How do we as parents and teachers and adults recognize the difference between general moodiness and a spiraling downward path that could lead to tragedy?
I think that can be one of the most difficult things for parents to recognize. There are a lot of similarities between sadness and depression. One of the things about sadness is it is a normal emotional response to something bad that has happened in our lives. We all have sadness at times, and it's a normal and healthy thing for us to experience. The difference between sadness and depression is something that becomes more than just the routine, normal sadness about an event. What we look for as far as symptoms are very similar to what we look for in adults. That period of, weeks or so of just mood that continues to go downhill and doesn't seem to be getting better. Feelings of emptiness or hopelessness, irritability, annoyed mood. Again, very difficult sometimes to differentiate out. But if it's different than what is normal for your teen, this could certainly be a problem. One of the big ones is loss of interest in activities that they used to enjoy. If you've got a kid that participated in a lot of sports and was always hanging out with their friends and they stopped doing this, that there's something wrong there. That's something that needs to be looked at, and that's not a normal part of moodiness. Feelings of worthlessness or excessive feelings of guilt about things, or really blaming and self-criticizing a lot, those tend to be symptoms of depression that we see quite frequently in teens also, where they feel like they're the worst person in the world sometimes, or nobody could possibly like them because of how bad of a person they are. When they start criticizing themselves like that a lot, there's more to it than just regular feelings of sadness.
And there's an illogic about that part of it, is there not? Because you could look at a young person and say, gosh, they've got everything going for them. They're smart, they've got friends, they're athletic, but they're still sad about this. There's an illogic to this, isn't there?
There is, yeah, and I think that's actually one of the best ways to really differentiate these things. Depression is being sad when there's nothing to be sad about, basically, and that is illogical. If your favorite pet just passed away and you're crying for a couple days, that's not abnormal. It's when everything seems to be fine, but you're still falling apart. That's the illogic of depression, definitely. One of the other things that you look for too, as I mentioned with the changes, looking at things about school performance, a kid who is getting straight A's that just doesn't care about their homework anymore, some of those really risky behaviors that were just out of character for the kid, that can be a real sign of a problem. And one of the other things that we sometimes don't recognize as depression is a lot of times, especially in younger people, it's hard to put into words how you're feeling. So instead, it becomes more physical. So it can either be a lot of unexplained aches, headaches, upset stomachs, things like that, just not feeling good health-wise, that just really can't be explained by a lot of other things.
Now, is this caused by the same thing that causes adult depression? We understand that adult depression is generally caused by some type of a chemical imbalance in the brain. Do kids have this same imbalance? Does it manifest itself that early, or does their depression come from something else?
Well, you know, one of the things that we are struggling with in this field, basically, is the fact that we are not 100% sure of exactly what causes depression. You know, serotonin is certainly one of the chemicals that is linked to depression, but the reason it's linked to depression is because we know that affecting serotonin makes depression better. That doesn't necessarily imply that that's the root cause of the depression in the first place. So I think depression is a very multifactorial thing, and we really are in the infancy of understanding exactly what causes it. That will be something that we probably do figure out at some point. But my guess is that for adults and children, it's very similar in a lot of cases, that there probably is something that is going wrong, either from an inflammation standpoint, a chemical balance standpoint, or something else of a physical nature that's affecting the brain. Again, it's not just being sad because something bad has happened. So I think there is something that has affected the way the brain is functioning, and that is why they're having these feelings. And that's why, you know, it's not going to get better just by telling somebody it's fine, or, you know, buying somebody a new toy or whatever you would do to make somebody not feel sad, because this isn't something that just can be fixed by, you know, the things that would help with sadness.
No, I recall, and I've been open on this show before, that I deal with issues myself. I'm bipolar too. And I can recall when I was young and I was feeling sad for no particular reason, because I had a lot of things going for me at that point. People would come up to me and say, "Todd, why are you so down? These are the best years of your life." And I thought, yep. Oh my word, if these are the best years of my life, I'm not looking forward to much. That didn't help.
No. You know, and I think people try. I really do think that most people are very good intentioned when they say stuff like that. I myself have struggled with some issues relating to anxiety a lot throughout my life, and I've had people say similar things to me. There's nothing to be worried about. Oh, well, good. I guess I won't have this panic attack then.
Yeah.
I feel much better now. But I really do believe that a lot of times when people do those things, they are trying their best. And, you know, we all want to make people feel better, and sometimes we're just not as good at it as we would like to be. But talking is important. And even if you do say the wrong thing, it's probably better than not saying anything at all.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I know all of those people were well-intentioned. They wanted me to feel better, and they didn't understand. And frankly, I didn't understand in those days many years ago either, that it was actually kind of being counterproductive. But how should we approach a teenager if we see some of these signs and think, gosh, we could be on that downhill slide here?
Well, I think the first and most important thing is you really need to trust your instincts on this. You know, I think part of us never wants to believe that there's something wrong with our kids. You know, you want to feel like they're fine. And I think you can make yourself try to ignore certain things that you know are wrong. But if you feel something isn't right, talk to your kids. It is very important to talk to them. And that's probably the leading thing that you can do to prevent a tragedy from happening, is really sit down with them. Let them know that you're there for them, that you're willing to talk, even if it's about something that they don't think that you'd want to talk to them about. You know, most kids that do end up harming themselves reach out to somebody in the time leading up to that, whether it's parent or friend or school people, you know, somebody they've talked to that noticed something was wrong and had that opportunity to intervene. So don't ever, you know, just blow something off if you think something's wrong. I think it's very important that you sit down and talk with your kids. You know, there was a old myth that talking about suicide could make somebody start thinking about it. And that has been disproven time and time again. I think it's very important to be frank and honest with kids and talk to them about the fact that suicide is something that some kids think about, and that if they're having these thoughts, that they can come and talk to you and you'll help them and not be upset with them.
Talking with Dr. Jason Bombard, he's an Aspyrus psychiatrist. Suppose my child, though, has just completely locked up, frozen up, won't talk.
That can be very difficult. But, you know, I think sometimes it's better to really push them than to walk away and wish you had done more. You know, I tell people all the time that, you know, if you intervene and get somebody help when they don't want it, you'll have a lifetime to apologize to them. But if you don't, you'll never get that chance again. So, you know, sometimes we're going to have to be forceful. Sometimes we're going to have to invade their space or tell them that they're going to talk to you, even if they don't want to. And, you know, that might at the time make them a little bit upset, but it also might save their lives. And that's really more important. I think kids will understand that you are trying to help them, even if they are actively trying to push you away while you're doing it.
There is, of course, the stigma that is still attached to this, despite the things that we have learned over the past decades and the efforts that have been made to try to lift that veil over this problem. There are parents who would not want to admit that their children have this kind of a problem. There are kids who would not want to admit that they have this kind of problem. How do we push past that barrier?
That is something that we really are working very hard towards. I do think we have made some very significant progress in this. But you're right. You know, I think there's still parents out there that would feel like if my kid's depressed, it must be because I'm a bad parent and I don't want people to think I'm a bad parent. And that's not true. You know, that would be like saying that you think your kid's got heart disease because you're a bad parent, or a broken leg because you're a bad parent. You know, these are physical things that you didn't cause, but you can help them with. And getting to understand that mental health issues are just as much physical health issues as any of these other things are is really important. Part of that is talking about it. I do think the schools are doing a better job of that now. And, you know, I will say if there is a kid that is listening to this and is feeling like they need to get help and they know that their parents aren't going to be responsive to this, go find somebody else. Go talk to somebody at the schools. Go talk to one of your friends' parents. You know, I think all of us growing up kind of knew which parents to talk to about certain things. And if you can't get the help you need from somebody in your own house, go find help somewhere else. Because there is going to be somebody out there that's going to get you what you need as far as help goes. You know, parents are human too, and some of us don't always do the right thing. And, you know, it's sad when you're looking for help and you can't get it from home. But there is help out there, and there's a lot of people that do want to prevent these awful things from happening.
Yeah, school counselors, school nurses, they're trained in this sort of thing now. They understand where you're coming from if you go to them, and they will, first of all, find ways to help you, and secondly, probably can help bridge that gap you might anticipate with your parents.
Yes, exactly. And as a follow-up to that also, you know, if you're a kid and one of your friends does come and talk to you about something like this or makes something that makes you worried that they might be harming themselves in the future, talk to somebody. There is no reason for a code of silence when it comes to potential suicidality. You know, if you think your kid your friend needs help, you need to get in there and get that help for them. You may have to apologize to them later for betraying their trust, but you'll have a later to do it in, and that's the important thing. I know a lot of kids that I've talked to that have lost friends, and all of them say they wish they had done something, and you don't want to be stuck with those thoughts for the rest of your life that could I have done something and didn't. So, you know, even if it's going to mean a fight or something, you may need to go to the kids' parents, go to the school, go to somebody, and get the help that you need.
the atmosphere within school itself among peers can be challenging, particularly if you've got someone who is perhaps being bullied, perhaps being tormented, and now all of a sudden they're faced with having to go in. Maybe they're going to have to take some medication with them, and that's going to open them up to more criticism and bullying. People find out that they're seeing a counselor or taking some action on this. There are people who are going to be mean about it. How do you deal with that?
That's a hard one. You know, I think bullying is a huge problem, and I think bullying in a lot of ways it has contributed to a lot of the teenage suicide. You know, if you look at a lot of the statistics, a lot of people who do follow through with suicide have been bullied at some point during their teen years. Yeah, I think one of the big changes now in modern society is that we have this constant source of potential bullying going on with social media. You know, it used to be that once you got home at the end of the day, you were safe and you could feel like, you know, everything was going to be all right, at least until you had to go back to school and face those people again. But now they follow you home on Facebook or whatever other social media you use. So bullying is a huge problem, and the school does need to really step in and prevent these things from happening. You know, bullying somebody because of a mental health issue, I mean, there really is very few things that could be as cruel as doing that, you know, and helping people to understand that this isn't funny. It's not something that is anything that should be, you know, picked on or teased about is very important. And, you know, having that real zero tolerance policy towards any form of bullying is also important. You know, talking to your kids about the damage that bullying can do to others is also very important. Trying to help them to understand that this is something that could be a life or death decision when you're thinking about whether or not to bully someone.
Summer vacation begins within the next several weeks. Big change in schedule, big change in surroundings for our kids. Their friends that they usually see aren't around them. Other people are around them. They have different activities. Does a lifestyle change like this trigger any type of depression?
It certainly can. You know, for some people, school is the escape from home. I think one of the things that we saw during the whole coronavirus pandemic was that there were a lot of kids that really were in a lot of crisis because they didn't have that structure of the school anymore. And, you know, I see a lot of kids here in my practice, and it was interesting to see how many people who had told me for years how much they hated school say, "Oh, I can't wait till school gets back in." You know, some kids really do like that. It is their social outlet for them. And, you know, if you've got a bad home life or if you've got some social isolation or something, and now you've got a whole summer worth of that to look forward to, that can be a big deal. You know, I think we all think of summer vacation as being the thing that everyone looks forward to, but, you know, there's some kids that don't. You know, when you look at things like, you know, even simple things like school lunches and things like that that are depended upon by some kids that don't have those when they're home, looking at those kids that are at risk for potential problems and trying to make sure that we are keeping an eye on them while they're home for the summer is important.
Dr. Jason Bombard is a psychiatrist with Aspirus. We're talking about teen and youth depression and suicide. So I'm a parent. My child either comes to me and says, "Hey, I'm struggling," or I notice that my child is struggling, and we've talked about it a little bit. We agree that some type of action is needed to help them get back on track. What do we do?
I think probably one of the first places to start is taking your child in to see their regular doctor, whether that's a family practice doctor or a pediatrician, depending on who your kid sees. That's a good place to start. They can help you know what the resources are that are available. They can talk to you about the treatment options that we do have. The two major options are therapy and medications of different kinds. And some are appropriate for one person and some are appropriate for another. But starting with that first visit to see the doctor is probably the number one thing you can do. It is also very important that if you do have some concern that your child might hurt themselves, but not imminently, removing as many risk factors as possible from the home is important. Don't leave medications lying around. If your kid is on a medication, make sure you hold on to it and just dispense the amount that they need on a daily basis. Firearms are a very big part of the culture in this area, and I certainly am not in any way saying that that shouldn't be the case. Hunting is one of the big things that a lot of people participate in and is a source of joy for a lot of people. So I'm not saying that we should limit the access to guns in general, but I think we do need to make sure that if there are guns in the home, that they are locked up, that people that potentially might be at risk do not have access to these. Suicide by firearm is definitely very high among teenagers and teenage boys especially, and the best way to prevent that from happening is not letting them have access to those things. So keeping those things away from people if you do have concerns is important. If the concern is more of an imminent nature, that you really do believe that they may harm themselves right away, get them to an ER. That's the most important thing. If you can't get them yourselves there, call 911 and they will get them there. There is no time to wait if you think somebody is actively going to harm themselves.
What if the parent is part of the problem? The parent is abusive, either physically or emotionally. The parent is cruel in that regard. How do you work around that?
That can be a very big problem. I think what can even be almost worse than that is the parent who's not actively abusive, but just isn't actively helpful either. Because an actively abusive parent, we can step in on those cases. If we have to, we can get CPS involved or DHS. They're able to get in there and, get the kid somewhere safe. But it's the parent that's apathetic that actually may be slightly more dangerous, because I can't make somebody care more than they do. And I can't necessarily make them, want to do the things that they need to do for their kid. I have had kids in here before that have been asking for help and don't seem to get a lot of it from their parents. And one of the things that is important to remember is that, at least in the state of Michigan, a kid over the age of 15 can go in and ask for help for mental health purposes on their own. There's also the school is a great resource for being able to reach out to somebody. They should have access to counselors and things of that nature there. If you have kids and you know that their friends are in crisis, if you have to take their friend in to the ER, that's okay. I mean, it's not the best choice, I don't think. It'd be better if the parents were able to do it. But some parents, like you said, just aren't going to be part of the solution. They're going to be part of the problem. And it can be very difficult when you're dealing with that. A lot of kids that are struggling with these issues do have issues at home that are making these things worse. And sometimes they feel like they can't raise their own concerns because there's so much problems going on in the home that they feel like that's just burdening the family with their own things, when really their things are just as important and need to be looked at as well.
And we all need to recognize that that is, as you mentioned earlier, that is as important as if that child has a broken leg or a broken arm. It's a physical problem that leads to this, and it has to be addressed. Dr. Jason Bombard, a Spiris psychiatrist, thank you for your time, and thank you for your insights here on Copper Country Today. And we certainly would encourage any adults who are seeing kids that they may think are in crisis to try to take some steps to get that addressed, because you may prevent a tragedy.
Yes. And one other thing I definitely would like to mention really quickly, there is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-TALK or 273-8255. That is available 24 hours a day in various languages, and they have people always available to talk with you. And starting in July, there will also be 988, which is the nationwide crisis line that can be called, similar to 911, but for people that are in a mental health crisis. So hopefully that rollout will go smoothly, and that will give us another place to reach out if you need help.
Excellent. Dr. Bombard, thank you for your time on Copper Country today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for everything you do.
And we'll continue in a moment.